Alrighty then. Hello there. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposkin. Of course, that's Emily Hogan once again with I'm Over It. Love that song. And not quite over it yet. We got a long way to go here with sports. And I just found out, Tim, that an acquaintance and friend of mine is a Buffalo Bills fan. So I just cut off all relationships with that person. So. Well, I don't know, man. I'm a little nervous about this one. Did I lose you? I can't hear you, Tim. Hello, Tim. Yeah, I can't hear you at all, Tim. Hello? Alright, I'm gonna call him back because I don't know what the heck's going on there. Anyway, good night coming up. We got Jim Rudloff, Marblehead High School football coming up here in just a few minutes, followed by Mike Grenier later on, Gary Larrabee, of course, our usuals. And I don't know what's going on here, but my phone just completely died. So I don't know what's happening. Alright, there we go. I lost you, Tim. Lost you completely. What happened?
You kept fading in and out on me.
Yeah, you as well. Anyway, we're back, so whatever you said, I didn't get any of it.
Well, I'm saying, no. You said that you were worried about tonight. But I said, you know, be confident in your own team. Yeah, they're playing the Bills, who are 8-4 as well. You know, sitting on top of the AFC East. But just have confidence in your team. They go out there and they play their game. They can win it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, no, Buffalo, no. If Buffalo's going to be a challenge, if the weather's not going to be good, but the Pats aren't necessarily a fair weather team. They don't mind playing in adverse conditions, as the record shows.
Yeah, and it seems that though they're playing on all cylinders. A complete team game, and that's coming up here very shortly tonight. Tim, we're going to talk with the Division III Super Bowl champions football coach, Marblehead, Jim Rudloff. I'm all messed up here. Division III Super Bowl state champions. And Coach Rudloff will be talking with us in a few minutes. Also, we want to say congratulations to Swampscott High School as well, the Division V champions. They beat North Reading. Want to say congratulations to North Reading as well. A fantastic season, and they fought Swampscott to a 14-7 game, and a lot of people thought that game wasn't going to be that close.
Yeah, you know, we did a lot of good things over the course of the playoffs. Teams, you know, qualifying for the playoffs, advancing through the playoffs, and Marblehead and Swampscott coming through for the Northeastern Conference. Up and down the North Shore, all the way up. Teams had great seasons. They provided their fans with a lot of excitement, and for two teams from the same conference. Not necessarily the same divisions anymore, but you know, to go out there and to take out Sidney Reckitt to Gillette and prevail—that was just fabulous.
I think it's tremendous. Later on, we'll be talking with Gary Larrabee, who will be talking some really weird golf over the weekend. Did you follow any of that, Tim?
No, I kept seeing the headlines. It's kind of hard to believe that you know seasoned professionals can really muck it up like that, but. This kind of seems the season to be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some really weird stuff going on. And then we'll talk with Mike Grenier about the perennial 500 Boston Celtics later on, maybe talk some Patriots chatter as well. Okay, Tim, I want to take a quick break here and see if we can get Jim on a little earlier because there's so much to talk about. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And great to be here during December, man. Things are going okay, so let's keep it that way. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Nothing new, Jim.
Yeah, nothing new. All right. Tim Kearns, Jim Rudloff here. Tim Kearns, of course, our superb MSO analyst, and Jim Rudloff, the coach of Marblehead High School. Jim, first thing to say is absolutely congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Feels great.
So much to talk about, Coach. I kind of want to start by looking at where you were a year ago at this time. Because a year ago at this time, everything was up in the air. Everything was kind of tenuous, and we didn't really even have Fall 2 on the horizon. So do me a favor and kind of look back to where you were then and all the stuff that's transpired since then to get you where you are.
Yeah, it's been a wild year, you know, because both seasons were absolutely compressed together. There really wasn't a break between the Fall 2 season and then the actual fall season that we just completed. But moving into the year, you know, as the winter progressed, and we knew obviously we weren't having the fall, but we had gotten word that if everything went well, we were going to have the spring season. You know, it was trying to find any way, shape, or form that you could get together with your team, because the MIAA had provided rules and guidance that allowed you to work a little bit with the team. So, you know, obviously during the winter season and with the COVID rules, getting inside the gym or anything like that was really impossible. So everything had to be outside, and we were pretty fortunate that the winter was mild, and we did get an opportunity to go outside a few times in December. I don't think in January we ever got a chance to go outside, but Coach Dombowski down at Milton started an indoor 7-on-7 league down in Weymouth. And we joined up for that. The kids had to be masked up, and all the COVID rules were in place at that time for those protocols. And that was a tremendous help to be able to get the kids together and do that through the winter. And then when the spring season started, we actually had one of the few groups of kids that were playing together and were throwing the ball, catching the ball, and defending. So that really helped us into the spring season. The kids were all lifting at home, trying to do a workout program that we were providing them with, but we didn't have access to a weight room. And so the spring season went well for us. We went 7-0. And then, you know, with maybe a month off, June, you know, was around the corner, and that gets you right into the college camps. The kids going to different places and trying out. And so football really began, you know, a month later after that. And, you know, it just rolled into, this past fall.
Jim, the contributions of your seniors in Fall 2, how did that affect this team in this actual fall of 2021?
It's a great question, because they are such a big part of what we just accomplished. Those guys, especially with everything that had happened and everything that they persevered through, really set a tremendous example for the team that we had this fall. We had a number of kids do things like Cam Janik, who now is playing sprint football for University of Pennsylvania. He was a 100 and, you know, maybe 80-pound middle linebacker and running back for us. We didn't have enough linemen, and he ended up starting and playing every single game at right guard for us. You know, sacrifices like that. He was Tim Cronin's backup the year before at running back. And, you know, sacrifices like that just really, you know, that made an impression on the kids that we had this fall. And we had a lot of kids make sacrifices like that this fall. And it went, you know, without a hiccup because of the example set by the kids that came before them.
Great, great story. And I'm going to let Tim jump in here in a minute. But, and we'll also talk about Tim's brother, Connor, who was just unfreaking believable. But Coach, I have a question I want to ask you about, because, you know, as you know, Paul Ingram is a good friend of mine and also of Tim Kearns. And when you first started coaching, Paul was sort of at the end of the run of an incredible, incredible series of successes at Gloucester High School. And you guys scrimmaged Gloucester before you actually played them, I believe, back then. You scrimmaged them every fall. Do you remember that?
Yeah, absolutely I do.
Silly question. All right. But now...
It was critical to building Marblehead's program, because Marblehead, under Coach Chernovitz, who was before me, had just turned a corner into becoming a much tougher football program. But the scheduling was still, for the Northeast Conference, small. which Marblehead was in at that time. And so I just felt it was, we couldn't schedule Gloucester, but it was really important to scrimmage Gloucester because they were at that time, you know, going to the Super Bowl for the Northeast Conference Large.
Mm-hmm.
And it was critical just to send that message to the kids that this is where we're going. This is, you know, what the goal is.
All right. I got to turn it over to Tim for a question or two here now, but, 20 wins in a row, you know, 20 straight, 19-0 in this particular calendar year, Super Bowl Division III champions, state champions, along with your arch rival Swampscott. I want to get to that later on. Tim, what have you got for Coach Rudloff?
Oh, gee, thanks, Rick. Congratulations, Coach. Great achievement. Self the kid.
I was
looking at one of the pictures in the Salem News, and you're sitting next to the kids, and the three kids that were in the picture, I was thinking, how did they pull this off? These guys look so small.
I was thinking,
hearts of lions is what you have to have when I'm looking at a couple of those kids and going, you know, they just didn't, yeah, they weren't big, beefy, but obviously they had it all were accounted in the head and in the heart.
Yeah, it's a great compliment, and they are not big. It's probably one of the smallest teams, if not the smallest that I've ever coached. But you know, underneath those pads, like Josh Robertson, if I hit him with my car would be damaged. He's built like a brick, you know what, and that's all from work in the weight room. And I give Josh a hard time about, you know, he works. He puts extra effort into his calves, because that's, you know, a point of emphasis for him. But he's just a strong kid for someone that looks like he's tiny. But at the same time, we had one offensive lineman who's 220 pounds, but the rest of the offensive line was under 200 pounds. And you know, we took that to the Super Bowl, and I'm really proud of that because those kids, you know, that really does show their heart, you know, more than anything else. And really also the coaching of our assistant, or our line coach, one of my assistants, Nick Broton, does such a great job with the offensive line. You know, and especially when you just see how big those kids are, it's really impressive.
You know, you mentioned the kids went to that, passing league that, Steve put together down in Weymouth. How did you get the kids to Weymouth to play in this every week? Did the school support you?
No, see, in order to do it, it was an independent league where the kids had to sign up. So every single kid had to sign up individually as an individual, which meant that they also had to provide their own transportation.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't a Marblehead thing, and that was the way to be able to do any league, whether they were doing an indoor lacrosse league or indoor basketball leagues, was nobody could sign up as a team. So it had to be done on an individual basis. And then, you know, of course, they put the kids together from the same towns. But the kids drove themselves down there every Saturday that the league happened. It was, you know, but again, easy when you realize that we're in the middle of something where these kids aren't being given the opportunity to do anything. So it really made the kids eager and, you know, willing to jump at the chance to do something like that.
Coach, the Super Bowl and the Thanksgiving Day games, probably two of the most, three of the most memorable games, I think, in the history of the Northeastern Conference, period, bar none. And I'm including, of course, Swampscott Marblehead, and I'm including Swampscott North Reading, and then your game against North Attleboro. And, you know, you mentioned the size of your kids. I want to get to the Super Bowl game and then maybe work backwards a little bit. You know, you guys had a 28-14 lead. I did not see Connor Cronin's catch in the first half, but I saw that one in the second half. But, Coach, it looked a little bit like that. When you're up 28-14, it looked a little bit like maybe your guys were wearing down a little bit. So bring me along in that second half, the sequence of events, when they came back to knot it up and then you guys pulled away.
Yeah, going into the game, North Attleboro, we knew, you know, exactly what they were. They were going to be they wanted to pound the ball, you know, on every single play and be a lot more physical than us. They had some, you know, size advantage on us, obviously. So our goal was to get out front, you know, and be able to score quickly and make sure we don't put ourselves in a position where, we're allowing them to run the ball on every single down. We want to, you know, get the advantage sort of in our favor. So going into the second half, we felt really good about, at least where we were in that standpoint, that we've accomplished that to that point, but that we needed to come out quickly. They were receiving the kickoff, so, you know, that obviously made things difficult, but we were able to pin them in their end, force a third and long. Leah McElroy intercepted the ball. We were able to convert almost immediately for a touchdown. And once that happened, you know, we felt good again about where we were. We needed to be ahead of North Attleboro to be successful, be able to, you know, sort of absorb the pounding that they were going to give us, but know that they were under the clock as they were doing that, and put a little bit of added pressure on them. So, but that really helped us, that quick score at the half, you know, and then from there, North Attleboro got rolling on their offense, but it also gave us some time to do some things too as well.
The play. It was like watching something on a Major League Super Bowl. Connor Cronin, and let's talk about him, Coach, because you know, when you talked after the game with the Salem News, he did everything, including that play. But it was so much more than just him, including Josh Robertson, the throw, the line protection, and so on. So take us through that play, if you would, please.
Sure. Coach Giardi did a really nice job on this too, up in the booth. He and Coach Nick Broughton, who's our line coach, we always get together earlier in the week. We talk about what plays we want to run, and we actually put the script of the game. You know, that was a Thursday game, so we did that probably on Monday night of what we wanted to do, and that way we could get a chance to run all those plays in practice. So one of the things we talked about specifically was Coach Broughton was adamant on third down, when this blitz comes, we have to be ready for it. So right before, as we were, you know, talking about that play in particular, you know, both Broughton and Giardi right away said that, you know what, they're going to send the two guys in the A gap. You know, we need to have one of these plays ready. So the play that we called was just a screen to our number two receiver outside. It's just a basic air raid offense screen, nothing fancy, but what really happened was that every single kid executed perfectly on it, made very, very specific blocks on very specific players, and just, it was beautiful to watch, you know, when you watch the film of it. And then Shane Keough, the wide receiver, continued to block the cornerback down the field, everyone did such a tremendous job, and that it really was 11 kids scoring that touchdown. But, you know, Connor's unbelievable. He didn't really have to do a whole lot. He had to avoid one linebacker that was trying to punch the ball out on him on that. And other than that, just, you know, run away from everybody else because the blocking was so good. And I don't want to take anything away from what Connor did, but, you know, he had the easiest job on that play when you see what everyone else did. It was really a great play to watch. Very proud as a coach.
Well, he gave credit to everybody. Tim?
Okay, so how do you trust this?
Yeah, it's great question.
Undefeated season, Super Bowl. Are you going to Disney World, Coach?
No, I wish I could. You know, no, it's just we'll take a week off and then start getting the kids rallied up again to get back in the weight room, the ones that aren't participating in a winter sport. And then I work with Coach Giardi. We're going to put together a weight training program for the basketball team that is something that's conducive also to help the kids out that are football players. And the rest of our team's doing a good job getting the kids in the weight room. So hopefully the kids will be in good shape when the spring comes, and we'll go from there and just see what happens. Hope, you know, it's going to be impossible to top what happened this year, but, we're still going to push to have the best possible season we can next year.
Coach, talk about the significance of Swampscott, Marblehead, Thanksgiving rivals, state champions from the same league in the same year, and the effect of the Thanksgiving Day game, because it speaks to the difficulty of schedule in getting there with two teams from two divisions, and you guys virtually had a tie game there until the last second. Talk about that in terms of the historical significance, Jim, because everything that's gone on the last week, it's hard to put it in perspective, and it's hard to just grasp what you guys and Swampscott, if I can add them, have done.
Yeah, no, Swampscott had an incredible year this year, and really credit goes to Swampscott and, you know, from my point of view, to Swampscott and all of the teams in the NEC large this year, because of their play, both Swampscott and Marblehead had the success that they did. We played against really good teams this year. and that made us better. And it sickens me to say it, but Swampscott, the playing against Swampscott was the key to us winning the Super Bowl. Playing against a team that was that tough, that nasty, you know, and that smart, you know, made us a better football team and made us, you know, certainly propelled us to the win in the Super Bowl. And I have no problem saying that. As difficult as it is for me to give them credit.
I get that. I know. So finally, Jim, what's up now? There have to be some celebrations and some awards and all that stuff going on for your kids.
Yeah, you know, we'll do our team banquet, which will take some time to plan this year. You know, you want to get it right. It's special for the kids, and you want it to be that way. So we'll take some time planning that. And then I know that some of my players, I'm fortunate to have won awards that they'll have awards nights and things like that that we'll go to. And that's going to be, you know, that's going to be a lot of fun. You know, anything like that, and where the attention is on the kids and you're able to show you know, just show other, you know, you want to always be able to demonstrate to the youth and to the younger kids that may be thinking about playing football that this is a really, you know, a really smart option for them.
Tim?
Well, you know, you're so right. The success of the team is the last year certainly has helped you, in convincing kids to play. I won't say recruit because that's a bad word, and you really, you know, you do some recruiting within your own school. You know, public schools don't do it generally outside of the school. But inside the school, you got a kid with some size. Maybe you've seen a kid, you know, running around the gym and you go, I could maybe use that kid. And the success of the team becomes a selling point for the kids that are in the school that are, you know, maybe a little hesitant to go out questioning their own ability. But seeing some of the other kids that are chipping in, that are on the team, they go, maybe I can do this.
Exactly, yeah. And even more tangible to the kids, something that they can see directly are kids that, you know, because we're battling against Finker and Prep. You know, the last Super Bowl MVP for St. John's Prep was a kid from Marblehead, Rocket, who's now playing at Brown. So
yeah, that's a familiar name.
We've lost some key kids to the Prep, and you want to make sure that, you know, with all due respect to the Prep, because everyone knows what you're getting from the Prep. You're getting, you know, the top program maybe in the state and the facilities and everything. You can't beat that. But what you want to say is, hey, you know, that maybe, you know, maybe if you stay here, you're going to be a star. You know, you'll play at the Prep, but maybe here, you know, this is a little bit different. This is a little different level. We'd like to compete with the Prep, but at the same time, maybe if you stay here in Marblehead, you'll start both ways and be a star. So, you know, being able to show that, and then as Tim said, which is brilliant, you know, a lot of those kids that are getting in on special teams for us or getting in for a play here or a series there are kids that would maybe not even make the varsity at the Prep. So, you know, it's good for them to go to the games at the younger guys and see all their kids, see their older brother or see their cousin or their friends or their neighbors out there having success and having fun, and you know, reporting back to them that it's definitely a good choice to do when you're in high school.
Jim, final comments, please. Go ahead, Tim.
You guys still do jackets for the kids?
Yeah, it's funny though. We're in the process now of trying to figure out what to do for the Super Bowl, and we've always done the tradition at Marblehead has always been the Letterman jacket, and
right.
So. The nice thing about that is, you know, I don't think there's ever been a kid that's earned his letter that played football that didn't get his Letterman jacket. So you see them all over the place. You know, but you know, not everyone gets a Letterman jacket. So we do, you know, every now and then, whatever the kids want to order, they might get hoodies or they might, you know, there's been years that we've gotten jackets, but it's not a regular thing that we do where we just get jackets for the football team.
Jim, as we close this out, please tell me, how much this means to you, to the kids, to the parents, and to the community, because I can tell you that everybody I speak to around the North Shore, we're just so happy and proud of the seasons plural that you guys have put together, but also the fact that, you know, you've culminated this with a championship, and what does it mean to you personally and to your kids?
Oh, the world. You know, it's, you, especially, you know, we're blessed in a way that it happened this year. you know, because it really is two seasons in a row. I think the only shame of it is that the seniors from the spring didn't get to be at Gillette with us. But, you know, for this year, it's just, you know, to put all that work in, it's the hardest that any group of kids, any group of coaches has ever worked. And that means the guys at Beverly and Swampscott and Danvers, they all worked as hard too. You know, we all did. And the amount of work that was put into being able to have that spring season and then going into this fall season, there's so much that goes into it, and the kids sacrifice so much, and they're still getting good grades, and they're still doing the things they're supposed to do. It's tremendous. So to top it off with a win at the end, the feeling is indescribable, because for the first time, you know, you get to the end and you've accomplished everything that you, every goal that you set, and that's rare that gets to happen. So it's special for these guys.
Yeah, no, that is, it's not just Eastern Massachusetts champions anymore. It's state champions. So that's phenomenal. Hey, Jim, thanks so much, man, for talking with us all season long and teaching us so much about football. And really appreciate this. But more than anything, congratulations to you and all the kids over there at Marblehead Football.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. It's so much fun to be on and just talk football.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon, Jim. Thank you.
All right. See you. Good night.
Take care. Good night.
Thanks, Tim.
All right. That's Marblehead High School football coach Jim Rudloff. Oh, my goodness. Tim, have you ever heard of a situation where two towns back-to-back in the same league come back as divisions as state champions, each of them? Not tied, but each of them a separate state champion.
Playing on Thanksgiving just the week before.
Playing
a classic game that in most instances would have drained both physically and emotionally any team, and yet they go back out, you know, just the next week and they put those kind of performances together to compete for the state championship. Just absolutely, you know, amazing. And then they need to be congratulated, you know, Coach Serino and Coach Rudloff, their staffs, the kids, you know, the commitment that they all made to let's get it done.
I think it's phenomenal. All right, we need to take a break. We'll come back with Gary Larrabee, talk a little golf and other stuff, and then Mike Grenier later on. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. So we will press this button, put a little music on, and play some commercials, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Oh my goodness. We're back now with sports historian and golf writer Gary Larrabee. And Gary, welcome back to the first week of December, and golf is still prevailing.
It certainly is. Tiger Woods tournament was over the weekend. We've got a lot to talk about there. And we've got to talk about Ron Kirby from Beverly, who's had two golf courses named to the best top 20 in the international golf course rankings. Lots of good stuff to talk about.
Well, hi, Gary. Have you ever had the occasion when you were playing around the golf to play out a hole and then proceed to go to the wrong tee and line them up?
I've never done it, Tim, but of course we know that Jordan Spieth and Henrik Stenson have done it. They did it yesterday at the Tiger Woods tournament down there, the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas, and Maybe they saw a couple of girls with very, very scanty bikinis on at the nearby beach and got distracted. Who knows?
You know, the way that my drives go sometimes, I've teed off on one, and I could play back on three had I so desired.
Yeah, they made fun of themselves after the tournament, after their round. They were the first group off, as you know, and they really goofed up. But they joked about they were each penalized two shots, and they finished, I guess, at the bottom of the field. But they were very good sports to talk about afterwards. And you know, both of these guys are counting money on their days off, counting the millions they've won and stashed in the bank. But getting back, Tim, to the big headline from that tournament was, of course, Norway's Victor Hovland winning his fourth major tournament, not among a major, but I mean significant tournaments. He's won four times, I think, on the PGA Tour. He came from six shots behind. Another example of where even the best golfers in the world don't know where their golf game is going to go from one day to the next. Morikawa was leading by five shots, starting the run. He had a six-shot lead on Hovland. I think he finished three shots behind. That's a nine-shot swing in one round of golf. And as we've talked about it before, Tim, but it's just the most fascinating game in the world. You can be 64 one day and 74 the next, and this was the perfect example yesterday down there in Nassau, the Bahamas.
You know, do we start calling that Norman, when you have a sizable lead and you blow it on the final day?
There's just no guarantees. We saw what happened to Greg Norman in the final round at the Masters way, way back, losing to Nick Faldo. And,
you know, that really put Faldo on the map, I think, that outcome.
It did, and it's just, you know, we talk about it all the time, but it's always so true. You just don't know what's going to happen from one day to the next, whether you're the best player in the world or the worst, like me. I'm sorry?
That title, that's me.
Don't fight, boys, don't fight.
One last, we should make one other mention about this very unique final round down there in the Bahamas. Sam Bird's an up-and-coming standout on the tour. He's won two or three times on the tour. He had a very strange situation. He missed just a second shot to one of the greens, and he was just off the green, like 10 yards off the green to the left, and he had to chip five times to get the ball back up on the green. The ball kept rolling back to his feet. And, you know, the green may not have been the pin placement may not have been set up very fairly, but no one else did that during the tournament. To have to chip it five times to get it on the green, something I've been famous for doing over the years.
there's a man at my own game as well.
Moving right along, though, the USGA made a big announcement, guys, this past week. They've established a U.S. Adaptive Open Championship, a new national championship that will showcase the world's best golfers with disabilities. They're going to be played at Pinehurst, a fabulous, fabulous venue, July 18 to 20. And the second one will also be played at Pinehurst in 2023. It's going to serve as the association's 15th national championship and a wonderful gesture on the part of the USGA to get involved with this type of a tournament, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and I'm kind of surprised that for an organization that is so entwined with special causes, it took them this long to think to create a tournament for those with certain handicaps. That's going to allow them to compete against each other?
Well, better late than never, I'd have to say, and more information will be coming out as to what kind of eligibility requirements a player will have to meet to be able to compete, but it's a wonderful step in the right direction. We congratulate the USGA for finally getting their act together in this regard. Moving right along, guys, as I was mentioning at the top, Beverly native Ron Kirby, 88 years old and still working on a major project done in Barbados. He's had two of his courses named 19th and 20th best international modern courses, those courses built since 1960 in the world. Old Head Over an Island is ranked number 19. This is in Golf Week magazine's annual rankings of all the best courses in the world in different categories. And the aforementioned Apes Hill is now 20th among the modern golf courses built after 1960. And we're talking a world ranking, so that's a very special feather in the cap for the amazing Ron Kirby. Very happy for him. Moving right along, if I might, Tim, before you make any comment, myopia, I haven't mentioned this year. Myopia moved up, Myopia Hunt Club in Hamilton moved up 20 spots from 92nd to 72nd on Golf Magazine's 100 greatest golf courses in the world. Mm. So a tip of the cap to Myopia and to Ron Kirby and to the USGA.
Gary, what singles out Myopia to be the course that it is in this region?
Well, Chris, it's the second oldest course here on the North Shore, 1894. The current golf course, the members and guests play, it was William Leeds' design from 1898. He did a lot of tweaking before he died, I think, in the early 19s. But it's like an antique golf course, Tim. You walk on that property and you look at the golf course and you play one hole at a time. You believe you've been taking back in time 100 years, if not more.
Can the public go there and walk the course or walk around certain areas of it?
I think you'd have to make arrangements to do that, but it might be possible if you check with the pro shop or check with the general manager. That's a good question, but it's really, for the membership and for their guests, but they
right.
do have a lot of local tournaments there. I keep saying they should have a national championship there, like a women's open or a women's amateur or senior amateur there, and Myopia wants something far more important, but still, it's an amazing piece of property, and it's just like it was 100 years ago, if not longer, and it's the most unique golfing experience you can have on the North Shore.
That sounds like one criterion, but what else goes into it, Gary, in making these, like, for example, the Ron Kirby courses in the top 20? What are some of the criteria that this is based on?
I think there's several, but of course, the design itself, the condition, the playability, all sorts of factors, but these rankings either come from the staff of the magazine involved, or in the case of Myopia's ranking, it comes from several hundred raters who travel the world every year playing all the best golf courses they can find. Very wealthy golf people, wealthy golfers, but they are the most serious of all golfers in the world, and they love Myopia, and I can understand why, to say the least.
Hmm. Cool. Tim, want to wrap it up here?
Anything more local, Gary?
Not at the moment, but we'll certainly talk about it when we can. I do have one other thing I should mention, though, for our listeners. It's not football-related, although he was a former member of Tedesco. But it's been announced that of the passing of 64-year-old Brian Buckley from Marblehead, who was one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of North Shore football.
Yeah,
Rick, you may be old enough to remember.
I remember the name. Yes, yes, yep, yep, absolutely.
At Marblehead, and then he played 1 year at Exeter, had a great year at Exeter. Then he became the quarterback, I think, his junior and senior years at Harvard.
Yeah.
For Joe Restick, a left-hander. Marblehead had the two greatest quarterbacks, I believe, in Marblehead high school history. And because we're talking about a program that just won their first Super Bowl and having a tremendous run right now. But Tommy Bucket Manning was the quarterback in 60 when they went 8-1. And he had all kinds of passing records and Eastern Massachusetts and for Marblehead. And then Brian came along 11 years later, and had a phenomenal career. But I wanted to make note of the passing of Brian Buckley from an extraordinary athletic family of Bob Buckleys. We can talk about that down the road.
Sounds good. Sounds good. That's good stuff. Sorry to hear that. All right, Gary, we approach Christmas, but we'll be back next Monday night. Looking forward to it.
Well, we'll think up some great stuff to talk about, I promise you.
I know you will. Thanks, Gary. Be well this week. Take care.
Stay well. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Okay. That's Gary Larrabee, golf writer and sports historian. And, Tim, where do the decades go? Never mind the years. Where do the decades go?
Oh, I know. You know, I was looking at the lit item today, and I checked the obituaries, and I saw one of a friend of mine whose dad was our insurance agent in Lynn, and I spent a lot of nights studying at the Lynn Library with Mike Barry and Chip Clancy, who was later to become the mayor of Lynn, and his dad was a very famous coach from West Lynn, and one of my early mentors, but Mike passed away, and him and Chip really helped me again zero in my studying, because they were both at Suffolk Law, and we would meet up in the Lynn Library, the beautiful old building, and we wouldn't say 10 words to each other over the course of 3 hours. We were all just focused on our studies, but we sat at the same table. And we were like monks.
Good memories. Nope.
When I started pitching, that was my first thought, going back to the Lynn Library.
Yeah.
And just studying with those guys.
Excellent. Good stuff. All right, Coach, we'll be back in a minute with Mike Grenier.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now with Mike Grenier, another sports writer here, formerly of the Salem News, but now just kind of freelancing all over everywhere. And Mike, first of all, how you doing?
Doing fine. I just heard Gary Larrabee, my old friend and colleague. And, you know, 1894, when Myopia opened, I think both Gary and I were there for opening day.
I might have been. I'm not sure about Tim. Okay, Mike, I guess we'll get started by saying, I guess the good news is that the Celtics are one game better than the Lakers.
Right, and you know what? We're going to find out an awful lot. I'll tell you what, over the weekend, I was, even though we've been sort of talking discouragingly about the Celtics the past few weeks, I was kind of encouraged, because Utah Jazz has one of the best teams in the league, and the Celtics played them really tough, lost by a couple points. And the thing that impressed me was the guy that we've criticized a fair amount, or at least I have criticized him, Jason Tatum, for his shot selection and taking too many threes. In that game against Utah, he missed his first 5 3-pointers. And then you know what he did the rest of the night? He took it to the basket.
Mm-hmm.
He got fouled.
Yeah, I noticed that, yep.
He finished with 37 points. He was 11 for 11 from the foul line. That told me, that was encouraging from the standpoint of, he realized he wasn't having a good night from outside, and he just, he didn't continue to take the dumb outside shots. He started taking to the basket, started drawing fouls, and he piled up 37 points in a close game. And then, of course, the very next night, they go to Portland, which has been banged up, you know, they had injuries, and the Celtics really took care of business, you know, scoring 145 points and winning easily. But the next 5 games will tell us a lot. The Celtics are 2 games over 500, Rick, as you mentioned, and the next 5 games will tell us a lot about where the Celtics are heading to the Christmas break, so to speak.
Before I let Tim come in here with his thoughts, what you said about Jason Tatum, I don't want to get too excited, but it seems to me, just, you know, with a very, layman's eye, that I saw what you said, and I agree with that, that he did that. And I also, correct me if I'm wrong, he's looking to pass more. They're moving the ball a little bit better for most of the game.
Yep.
So his assists are climbing.
Yep, no
but
question.
But he's also coming back on defense. He's grabbing some boards. And Enes Freeman, Freedom is just cleaning the glass with rebounds. So there's,
yep.
there's some little different play there.
Yeah, and, you know, and that doesn't surprise me about Enes, the artist formerly known as Cantor, you know, that he's always been a very above-average offensive rebounder. And you look at him play defense, and he's slow, and he's a step behind, and he doesn't get a lot of defensive rebounds, but for some reason, he's magical around the offensive glass. The ball seems to find him. And next, you look at the end of the night, and he's played like 18 minutes, and he has like 11 or 12 rebounds to go with 10 points. That's very good production for a guy who plays, let's say, less than 20 minutes a game. So, yeah, I agree with that aspect. And I'm hoping that the coach will start playing the bench a bit more. You know, we're talking Lankford and...
Well, you said that, yeah.
You know, and Neesmith. But I want to mention these next five games for the Celtics because I said they're two games over 500. They've got back-to-back games at the Staples Center in L.A. Tomorrow night they play the Lakers, who are a 500 team, and they play the Clippers on Wednesday night. Again, they're a 500 team as well, but of course Kawhi Leonard has missed the entire season as he recovers from a serious knee injury, okay? And then Friday night they play at Phoenix, and Phoenix, of course, has an 18-4 record. It has been the best record in basketball, best team in basketball, along with the Golden State Warriors. By the way, they play this game at the Footprint Center. Now, what corporation has enough money that can convince the Phoenix Suns to call the building the Footprint Center? I've never heard of such a thing, right, Tim? We're going to the Footprint Center. I'll meet you at the concourse of the Footprint Center, you know? So they've got Phoenix, and then next Monday they're at home against the defending champion Milwaukee Bucks, who have won like 9 of their last 10 or 10 of their last 11. And then next Friday night, a week before Christmas, they play the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry, and they're 18-4.
Whoa.
So they have a really tough road to hoe here the next five games. And if they come out of that 3-2 or something like that, I think that would be pretty good, right, Tim?
Yeah, you know, I saw the score the other night, and I'm like, 145 points. Maybe we should save some of those. But, you know, you hear that about Tatum and Tatum. You know, did he get a phone call from Larry Bird?
Yeah, exactly,
He seemed like, go do something else.
Yep.
You know, that's what Larry was known for. If he was having an off night, he was getting rebounds. He was getting assists. He was getting steals. He never let one part of his game, if it was off, impact his entire game. He compensated and had a better game on the other side.
I agree. And, you know, guys, as we talk hopefully about Jason Tatum's continued improvement as a team player, we know he can score, he can do all those individual things. I'm a bit concerned about Jaylen Brown missing so many games.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Rick? I mean,
he
got off to a phenomenal start. And as we look at the standings today and the stats, he's only played in 13 of the team's 24 games. So he's missed nearly 50% of the games. And what's troubling about it is it's a hamstring issue or a quad issue, and it keeps recurring, right? He plays a couple, three games, then he's out for a couple of games. He didn't play the other night against Portland. And if this is going to be a recurring issue, that's going to be a real big issue for the Celtics down the line because, you know, the season, as you know, you want to compile the best record possible and sort of jockey for playoff position. But if Jaylen Brown can't be counted on, that's going to affect the Celtics in a huge way. And right now, we just can't count on Jaylen Brown being ready on a nightly basis. And that's kind of concerning. There's no question in my mind because he was averaging 27, 28 points a game early in the season. His average is down to 21 points a game because he's not playing as many minutes. And he's been injured quite
the last
couple of weeks.
The last couple of games I saw him play, it looked to me like he was, I don't want to use the word timid because it's the NBA and he's a big guy, but maybe it looked like his confidence was down a little bit. He just wasn't aggressive. He wasn't, I don't want to say he looked lost, but he didn't look like him.
Well, the word I would use maybe, Rick, is tentative.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yep.
You know, tentative. Yep. He's a little bit gingerly on that hamstring or that bad leg, and maybe he's not driving it to the hoop the way
okay.
he wants
oh.
to, and
yep.
he's feeling somewhat uncomfortable on the floor, and he's not going to take a lot of chances to re-injure it long-term. So, but you can't play that way in the NBA or any other major league sport. If you're ready to play, you got to sort of play all out. Otherwise, you're hurting the team. So I think it's going to be a major thing for the Celtics to watch these next few weeks. Is this going to be a recurring thing throughout the season, or do they rest him? For, as you know, sometimes the cure is to rest the guy maybe a little bit longer than he'd like to rest, but come back 100%. So that's a decision the Celtics medical staff will have to make. So it is a concern, though, because Jaylen Brown was off to such an outstanding start, and they need him as a secondary or even a primary scorer along with Jason Tatum. And you know what? Schroeder has been playing great basketball. We should mention him. The other night, 31 points and 8 assists, and he's been playing terrific, whether he's at the point guard. A lot of times when Marcus Smart moves over to the two guard. So I think he deserves a lot of credit for at least keeping the team afloat a couple of games over 500 here so far.
You know, I when I watch them, I'm much more comfortable, and we talked about this before, Mike.
Yep.
Is Marcus Smart just being the number two?
Yeah.
Now, being the defensive guy, takes a handful of shots during the course of the game, but brings the defensive intensity, you know, and he does lead the team there. I mean, he is, but that would allow him to certainly focus on
No question.
Versus him in the back of his head going, you know, oh, let's go play offense, because that just scares a lot of people, I know.
Well, you're right, and you're right there. That's a good point. And you know what? If you relieve him of those offensive, I think he wants to take responsibility for the offense sometimes, and he shouldn't have to, because Schroeder can play that role, like you said. And I think in an ideal setting, you'd want Marcus Smart to be your defense, because he can set the tone defensively for the rest of the team to play hard on defense. He plays so hard on defense, he'll take on, as we've seen, he'll take on a 6'10" guy, a 7-footer. He's not afraid to mix it up underneath with opposing players who are much stronger and bigger than him, because he's fearless on defense. Unfortunately, he's fearless on offense. Right? And he takes a lot of ill-advised shots. But if you can kind of reduce his offensive, let's say, the responsibility he wants to take on offense, his accountability on offense, and let him just play defense and take the occasional. He's very good driving to the basket. He's got a decent mid-range game. He's just not a good three-point shooter. Hasn't been for 6 or 7 years. And I don't think that'll change. If you're not a great three-point shooter after 4 or 5 or 6 years mm-hmm. in the league, I don't think you're going to be a great three-point shooter 7 or 8 years into the league, you know?
Al Horford's been hitting three-pointers, and he's been playing pretty well.
Great point. Al Horford, I think, to me, has been the most pleasant surprise on the entire team. I thought, I didn't want to say use the word washed up or the term washed up, but I thought he would give them limited effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been giving them bigger minutes than anticipated, and more scoring and more rebounding, and he's hitting three-pointers at a pretty good clip. Yeah, he needs the occasional rest, sit out a game here and there. That's fine. But he's been playing some pretty heavy minutes, and he's been very effective guarding people, shooting the threes. He's been very good around the basket. He's always been very good around the basket, very crafty. And he remains a good offensive threat and a solid defensive player. So that's a great point, Rick. I think he's been a real bright spot in a team at least being over 500 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So are we looking now at the Bills Mafia? I'm watching to see if they're going to the Bills Mafia. I'm watching to see if they're going to burn down the stadium tonight, okay?
Oh, jeez.
Whether their intention is to maybe burn down every home in New England, because they are tough, you know?
Hey, listen, I got to ask you guys both, okay, before you go on. Did you see the article? I forget what sports site it was on, but it said the rest of the country, the rest of football, the rest of the entire football country's biggest fear is that it's Tom Brady versus New England in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you love that? I read that same story, and I love that. I love that. You know what? Tom Brady is right now a favorite to win the MVP award, and why not?
I know.
I mean, he's by far the leader in passing yards and touchdown passes, and he looks like he's 31 years old.
Oh, my God.
And wouldn't it be, it would be the biggest nightmare the NFL nation faces if Brady faces a young Mac Jones in the Super Bowl. And I have to thank, don't we have to thank John Harbaugh, Tim, Baltimore Ravens for going for 2 points last night against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're controlling their own destiny in the AFC, the number one seed, and instead of going for the tie, a sure thing, and taking your chances in overtime, he goes for two in the final seconds and steals. They lose the game, and now the Patriots are suddenly the number one seed in the AFC. Of course, you know, obviously this is a very difficult game for the Patriots tonight, the Monday night game, and it starts in a few minutes. But, you know, the Patriots are right there. I mean, the Patriots are right there.
You know, as a lot of famous people said, what were you thinking?
yeah, exactly. And to underscore what Rick just said, it's you know, it's shaping up as the possibility anyway that the Tampa Bay Bucs are going to go back to the Super Bowl. I mean, they have to get through some heavy iron in the NFC, and the Patriots, of course, would have to get through, you know, Buffalo or the Ravens or the, you know, the Chiefs have won five in a row. But the Chiefs somehow don't scare me. They've won five in a row, but Mahomes is not really playing all that great. And, they're certainly going to be a threat. But they just, I don't know. There's something funny about that team, even though they've won five straight. They all look like an overwhelming, overpowering team.
Mike, how about this? Brady goes back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
With the MVP in hand.
Yeah.
Take on the Patriots and Mac Jones with his Rookie of the Year trophy.
Yes. That's right. Yeah. Roger Goodell would want to shut down the league for a year. just hoping that Brady retires.
Oh, God.
You know, I have yet to see really any definitive statement that Brady's retiring this year. Is it assumed that this is his final year? I mean, he's having a sensational year. The team is 9-3. If he feels physically able to do it, would he want to come back next year?
His statistics are ridiculous. They're so far ahead of every other quarterback. It's ridiculous.
Exactly. And he's thrown more touchdown passes in his 40s than he did in his 30s.
Yeah.
20s. Yeah.
It's nuts.
He'll be back, Tim? You think he'll be back?
I think Gronk's already said, if he's back, I'm back.
Sure. And I can see that. Yep.
They're
yep.
waiting to see what each other is going to do.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, boys. Let's wrap this up and go watch the game.
I agree. And, you know, obviously, after this Monday night game here, and maybe the Celtics can make it fun if they win some games on the West Coast.
All right. Let's hope so. And it's always fun talking sports no matter what. Mike, thank you so much. We'll see you next Monday.
Yeah. Take care, Tim. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Very good. All right.
All right, Michael.
Take care.
All right. That's Mike Grenier, sports writer. And, Tim, I'm ready. What's the game start? 8:15, something like that?
8:15, 8:20. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Okay. So let's go do that, and we'll talk again pretty soon.
All right, brother.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay.
All right. Take care. That is bye. MSO's Tim Kearns, and that'll take care of it. You can get a hold of us at msonewsports@gmail.com, and don't forget that the Salem News Sports Podcast drops tomorrow at about 8 a.m., and there'll be a lot of look back on the high school Super Bowls and a lot of a little bit of looking ahead to the winter high school sports season as well with Phil Stacey, the executive sports writer of the Salem, executive sports director of the Salem News, sports editor, I should say, and Matt Williams, the assistant sports editor, along with Nick Giannino, and, of course, Nick Kukuru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, and MSO's host, Bill Newell. That's tomorrow. Coming up here on MSO News Sports. You can get a hold of us at msonewsports@gmail.com. On behalf of Bill Newell, Tim Kearns, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Have a very pleasant good evening, and be well.